From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA.
As a little kid, I've always wanted to be perceived as an American hero fighting for freedom and, you know, justice and the American way.
On this week's program, a former Marine returns to Afghanistan, not to fight, but to listen and to learn.
I came to the realization that my patriotism had been exploited. I was made a tyrant, not a hero.
Also, from listening to stories in Afghanistan to right here at home, escuchar es un acto de amor. Listening is an act of love. We begin a new collaboration with StoryCorps, Historias.
In Cuba, you had a room full of dolls.
Yeah.
And your mother was trying to sell them before leaving. You were crying, what is happening? And I said, soon I'll buy you another doll.
I remember that.
That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. Joining us to discuss the news affecting the Latino community this week is Professor Bruce Bagley. He's with the University of Miami and teaches international studies there. Hello, Professor Bagley. Welcome back to Latino USA.
Thank you very much.
So, Bruce, there have been a lot of developments this week in Latin America that we'd like to discuss with you. But let's start first with Honduras. This is a story that we've been following on our program, but this week we think is especially noteworthy because ousted President Manuel Zelaya returned to the country. He's been holed up in the Brazilian embassy in Tegucigalpa for the past few days after secretly reentering Honduras. So, Professor Bagley, Zelaya has been saying all along that he would return. What do you make of this situation? How did he get in, and why the Brazilian embassy?
Well, we're not sure how he got in, but he was probably smuggled in a car and taken to the Brazilian embassy. This seems to have been worked out with Brazil, which has supported his return to the presidency. And indeed, Brazil is taking considerable credit as an important player in the foreign policy of the region, when other actors such as the OAS and the United States and Oscar Arias himself from Costa Rica have not been successful. One of the ways that escalation here to pressure the Micheletti government to accede to the Arias plan would be to cut off trade access for Honduras to the United States and the European markets. Honduras is a participant in the CAFTA-DR trade agreements. It also receives general system of preferences, and we have not moved on that front yet.
So it appears that this move by Zelaya is, as you say, kind of upping the ante, but when President Barack Obama says that you have people who complain when the U.S. intervenes in certain countries in Latin America, and now some of these same people are saying, President Obama, you have to intervene and get involved in a situation like this coup d'etat in Honduras, what does this say about President Barack Obama, his relationship specifically to Honduras, and in broader terms, his relationship to Latin America and the road he's going down with this?
I frankly think that he has been quite measured in the response. He promised a more multilateral and dialogue-based foreign policy. And in fact, that's what he has done. He has consulted with both the OAS, and there was a vote taken, which was unanimous against the de facto government of Micheletti. The United States supported that vote. So the criticisms have often been that he has been moving too slowly. I think that it would have been incorrect for the United States to act as a bull in a china shop and to simply spout off about this unilaterally. That's why it's been a bit slow.
Okay, Professor Bagley, let's talk about some news affecting Cuba. California Representative Democrat Sam Farr has said that there is enough support in the House now, the House of Representatives, to pass legislation to lift the ban on travel to Cuba. Farr co-sponsored the legislation that would allow travel except in times of war. Bruce, you're based in Miami, where there's a huge Cuban population. What's kind of the buzz there?
Well, there is a growing division. The older the population segment is, the more they are called nostalgicos, the nostalgic ones who long for a Cuba before Fidel. They remain adamant that until Fidel goes, that no recognition of Cuba can take place and that no relaxation of the U.S. embargo, travel, or anything else. The younger generations, the mariposas as they're called, are increasingly interested in engaging Cuba because they, along with many others in the U.S. Congress and more broadly in the academic and intellectual communities, see almost 50 years of embargo as being a failed policy.
Professor Bruce Bagley, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
My pleasure.
Bruce Bagley is a professor of international studies at the University of Miami. Also in the news this week, the MacArthur Foundation announced 24 new grant recipients, commonly known as the Genius Awards. Among this year's winners was Haitian immigrant and novelist Edwige Danticat. We spoke with Edwige in April of 2008. We talked about the writing of her latest book, Brother, I'm Dying.
The realities of being in this country means that every time, you know, there's this generation, we're one generation removed from the place where we come from. And it's a mixed blessing, that reality. So I wanted to write this book in a way for my daughter, for my nieces and nephews, who may not know Haiti, certainly will not know it in the way that I knew it. I know it less than my parents did, and they will know it less than I do. So it was written for them, with them in mind.
For the entire conversation with new MacArthur Genius Award winner Edwige Danticat, and for updated news alerts, visit our website at latinousa.org. It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. The war in Afghanistan, not the war in Iraq, is what's in headlines these days. The Afghan war began just weeks after the attacks on the World Trade Center, and back then the American people overwhelmingly supported it. But as we approach the 8th anniversary of that war, the Taliban has regained control of most of the country, civilian and military casualties continue to grow, and according to a Washington Post poll, the majority of the American public now believe the war was not worth fighting. Among the early supporters of the war was a young man by the name of Rick Reyes, who served as a Marine in Afghanistan and later in Iraq. His experiences on the front lines eventually turned him against both wars. For this special report, independent producer Reese Ehrlich accompanied Reyes as he returned to Afghanistan for the first time since being stationed there in 2001.
Girls excitedly pump water from a well here at a Kabul refugee camp for families displaced by the war. The dusty dirt roads look similar to those Rick Reyes encountered here as a combat Marine. I asked if it also reminds him of rural Mexico, where his family grew up.
In a lot of different ways it does. Unimproved roads, all the mud huts.
But this is a lot poorer than Mexico.
Yeah, definitely a lot poorer.
We met Tawaz Khan, a local headman, who invites us into his tent.
So you can sit there on the...
All right, so I should take my shoes off, right?
Khan says 1 year ago, coalition forces bombed his home in southern Afghanistan, killing 5 family members and wounding 7 others. In order for family members to get compensation from the U.S. or Afghan governments, they must provide a document from their village leader. Khan produces just such a letter.
This letter certifies that I lost many members of my family. The elders of the village say it's true. My daughter lost her left arm because of the bombing. It was the coalition forces who did it. Nobody has given us compensation, neither the Afghan government nor the coalition countries.
Reyes is clearly moved by the family's story.
So tell him that that the work that I'm involved in is opposed to the conflicts and the policies that we're implementing in the country.
For Rick Reyes, it's been a long journey. He grew up in East Los Angeles, the son of working-class Mexican immigrants. As a teen, he got in trouble with the law. But he always had dreams of joining the military. In 2000, he enlisted in the Marines.
Being a part of the military is something I've always wanted to do as a kid. It's just something that really appealed to me. I always wanted to have that sense of serving my country, you know, that patriotism. And I figured at that point that if I was ever going to do it, that'd be the perfect time.
He was deployed in Kandahar, Afghanistan, at the beginning of the U.S. invasion in 2001. His unit had no translator to communicate with the local civilians, and he learned that U.S. intelligence was frequently wrong.
There's no way to know if these guys are combatants or not. So you kind of do make yourself a target and wait around to get shot at. And at that point, I mean, there's still that question, well, maybe they're just pissed off because we're here.
Reyes also served in Iraq, where he experienced similar problems. He asked himself, if the U.S. is helping the people of Iraq, how come they keep shooting at me? He began to question why the U.S. had invaded both countries.
I came to the realization that my patriotism had been exploited. You know, it was something I truly believed. As a little kid, I've always wanted to be perceived as an American hero fighting for freedom and, you know, justice and the American way. So when I had the opportunity to do that, you know, it was almost I was stripped from that opportunity, and instead I was made a tyrant, not a hero.
Reyes says his views about the war developed further after he got back from serving in Iraq.
I came home to Fahrenheit 9/11, the movie, which made everything very difficult because you've given so much of yourself into this mission that you know, something like Fahrenheit 9/11 just really, it plays a number on you because you feel like, you know, you did it all in vain.
Reyes says he began to draw strength from the fact that a majority of Americans opposed the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. In April 2009, he testified before the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee on the need to end the war in Afghanistan. He planned to return to Afghanistan along with a congressional delegation. The congressman ended up not going. He came anyway as a member of the Iraq Veterans Against the War. But here in Kabul, he would find his anti-war views challenged from an unusual source.
Careful.
After talking with the refugees in Kabul, Reyes drove to Kabul University to meet with students. These Afghan college students don't want the immediate withdrawal of U.S. troops, fearing the return of the Taliban. Student Samoum Tasmin says Afghans want the U.S. to change tactics and train the Afghan army, something the Obama administration says it is now doing.
And right now, the only negative point about the U.S. people, U.S. military, is that they are killing civilians. And other things, they're helping us. They're helping us in everything. They're helping us in our education. They're helping us in our society. They're helping us even in our management affairs.
The students also hope that the U.S. can have a positive influence on women's rights. Under the Taliban, women were not allowed to work or even attend school. Student Hosai Kazmi says that during the U.S. occupation, conditions have improved for women in Kabul. But the pro-U.S. Karzai government hasn't done nearly enough.
After we finish the schools in Afghanistan, especially for girls, I think the only opportunity they have is going to university. And after we take our BA degree, there is nothing to do in Afghanistan because we cannot study further. So we have to apply for scholarships on anything to foreign countries. And I think most of families do not let us to go. But the ladies you are seeing here, they are very ambitious and they want to work and they want to study furthermore also, including me.
Rick Reyes tells Kazmi that the U.S. government can't promote women's rights or rebuild the country so long as it focuses on a military victory.
I'm a former U.S. Marine, and my job was to fight. I didn't educate, I didn't rebuild, I didn't reconstruct, I didn't train the army. My job was just to fight. Through my experience, I found that the fighting did a lot more bad than good. I just want to know from you guys if you feel the same way.
Quite a few of the students nodded their heads yes. Reyes and the students agreed that current U.S. policy in Afghanistan isn't working. However, they couldn't agree on what to do about it. The refugees in the camp on the outskirts of Kabul also have strong opinions about the war. They want to return home, and for that to happen, they say, the U.S. must withdraw its troops from Afghanistan. Tawaz Khan wants Reyes to convey a message to the American people.
Among the current American soldiers, there are people doing bad things. We don't like them. They're destroying our country. I'm very grateful that you're doing something to help. I appreciate your help to bring our stories to the West.
ګوره دا دغه خلک افغانستان خرابوي معنی ملک خرابوي دا خلک زموږ په کار ولر دي.
For Latino USA, Amri Serlik, Kabul.
Listening is an act of love. That's a phrase that's become well known to public radio listeners through the award-winning collaborative production known as StoryCorps, people telling each other their stories. Today, we're pleased to inaugurate a new chapter in the StoryCorps franchise. It's called Historias. Our first historia comes to us from Georgetown, Delaware. Ileana Smith sat down with her father, Gustavo Mestas, and he told her about leaving Cuba in 1963.
Papi, tell me how you came to the decision to escape from Cuba.
That is a very complex problem, okay? When Fidel started this revolution, even the churches were ringing the bells, everybody was so happy. But after a while, you saw that was not so good. You said, Jesus, this is not good for my children. So one day, my friend that used to have a boat told me that he wanted to leave. And I said I wanted to leave too.
I remember I was looking out the porthole. I saw the Russian Coast Guard with the big guns.
Yeah, we saw the searchlight of the patrol boat. And my friend, he stopped the motor, he stopped everything, said quiet everything. No one talked, no nothing. Because the patrol boat is the one that was killing people. The next day, we reached the coast of Florida close to noontime. It was tough. I didn't know if I was going to be able to practice as a doctor here or not. You have to take some classes. You have to pass an examination. And we didn't have any money. So I pick up tomatoes in the fields, and I work cleaning in a motel. And then at night, I have to go to medical school, and I have to walk 57 blocks. Because I didn't have money for the bus.
But even when you didn't have money for the bus, you bought me a Barbie doll.
Oh, because in Cuba you had a room full of dolls.
Yeah.
And your mother was trying to sell them before leaving. And you were crying, what is happening? And I said, soon I'll buy you another doll.
I remember that.
I think that the people here, the way they accepted me and the way they treated me, I pay them with hard work. I worked for 30 years as a general practice. I never miss a day. I had a fractured ankle and went with crutches every day to my office to work. Even today, after more than 8 years retired, I go to the groceries and I see ladies and they kiss me. I think they love me.
I know they love you. They always tell me. Well, I want you to know that you have had the greatest influence in my life of anyone, and I love you, and I respect you and admire you.
Thank you. I love you too.
That was Ileana Smith and her father Gustavo Mestas in Georgetown, Delaware.
We live in a culture where there are so few people, famous people, who are, you know, just kind of endlessly blathered about. And it's the stories of everyday people and their courage and compassion and humanity. Those are the stories we should be celebrating. They're the stories we should be listening to. And they're the stories we should be presenting to our kids as examples of who they can and should grow up to be.
And that's David Isay, president and founder of StoryCorps. We'll be talking to him in a minute about StoryCorps and Historias and how you can participate in this new project. So, quédense con nosotros. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Escuchar es un acto de amor. Listening is an act of love. That's the message of StoryCorps, the project to record the stories of everyday people across the country. Today, we're launching Historias, a project to document the Latino experience in the United States. David Isay, founder and president of StoryCorps, is with me here in the studio. Dave Isay, it's great to see you.
Hi, Marie. Great to see you.
We've been catching up, a long-time friendship from many, many years in public radio, and we've each kind of found our voice. But when was it, David, when you kind of realized, you know, there's something here, this notion of getting people in a studio to talk to each other? When did it kind of click for you?
I did a documentary about 18 years ago with two kids on the south side of Chicago where I gave them tape recorders. And it was, I think, the first nationally broadcast kind of do-it-yourself radio documentary where these kids took their tape recorders and interviewed family and friends and loved ones. And they spent a week documenting their lives growing up on the south side of Chicago. And I saw when these kids, for instance, like got in bed with a grandmother and interviewed a grandmother, that the microphone gave them the license to have conversations they'd never had before. And that when these relatives died, and over the years, you know, almost everybody from that documentary has died, these tapes became incredibly important to these kids. So that was, I guess, an aha moment for me. And after that, it was kind of the trajectory was towards creating StoryCorps, which started 6 years ago.
So essentially, what is the basic idea of StoryCorps?
We put booths all over the country where you can bring a loved one. And you make an appointment with a grandmother or a parent or a friend or your bus driver, anyone you want to honor by listening to their story. And you talk and you listen. And at the end of 40 minutes, two CDs have been burned. One goes home with you. The other stays with us and goes to the Library of Congress. So your great, 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 great grandchildren can someday get to know your grandmother through her stories and voice and memories.
You decided that there was something particular about the Latino Historia, the Latino history that you wanted to hear. What happened? Tell me a little bit about that.
There is no American story without the Latino story. So there was no question that at some point we would have to start a special initiative to focus on the Latino community. You know, frankly, other than Latino USA, public radio, despite all of its best intention, doesn't draw a Latino audience. And I think it's incredibly important that both Latino communities feel honored by a project like StoryCorps and recognized by a project like StoryCorps and realize that what public broadcasting is, which is a service that's supposed to serve all Americans with excellence and dignity. And, you know, I think that public broadcasting at its best is about listening.
So I remember hearing the story of Connie Alvarez, who's interviewing her mom, Bianca. Tell us a little bit about, because we get ready to listen to this tape, what we're going to hear.
This interview was recorded in Los Angeles, and it's kind of an interesting example of what happens in StoryCorps. Whenever we pull into a town, we open up reservations for one of our booths. We have these traveling booths, and reservations go in an instant. I mean, literally in 30 seconds, all the reservations will be taken. And Connie was outside of the booth, and there was a cancellation. And she heard about it, and she grabbed her mom, Blanca, who was nearby, and brought her into the booth. And they had a conversation which they'd never had before. They'd never talked about this before.
We were walking and walking through the mountains.
In the desert?
Uh-huh. And the man, he told us to take our shoes off because it was a lot of rocks. And he said, I don't want no noise because the dogs are very, very good to detect every noise. And he said, I'm going to whistle, and you're going to duck. And it was a point where he whistled, you know, we went out on our stomachs and we stayed there. Oh, my God, I can see ants, big ants crawling. And I was so scared. And he said, when the Border Patrol changed shifts,
yes,
you know, you're going to run.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it was a torture in those rocks without shoes. So we ran as fast as we could. And then he said, you're going to walk through that bridge. I'm going to walk behind you and you're going to give me the money there, and then from there, you're on your own.
What kinds of jobs did you have since first arriving in the country?
We were gardeners, and we were cleaning offices.
I remember the offices.
You remember that? We had the night shift cleaning. Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, we had to take you and your brother. I didn't have a babysitter.
I have memories of running into everyone's office and eating candy from their candy dishes. Mm-hmm. I remember being with my brother in our pajamas with the little plastic feet. And I also remember you would always buy us a cup of noodle from the vending machine,
right?
Like a snack, and then put us to bed on people's office couches and then you'd carry us to the car when you guys were done cleaning the offices. Right. I remember that. Did they ever know? Did your bosses ever know that you took your kids?
No, I don't think so.
Is there anything that you've never told me but want to tell me now?
When we first came here, we went through a lot of things like not eating. I guess for 6 months, your father lost his job, and but we never told you that.
I do remember a lot of bean tacos.
But when you ask us why the same thing, remember?
Yeah.
I didn't want to tell you why.
Yeah. If you could do everything again, would you raise me differently?
I would dedicate more time, I guess. You know, I was so busy going to school, too, that I guess I neglected you a little bit.
No, for me, watching you go to school with two kids and trying to make ends meet, that was the biggest inspiration for me to finish college. I thought, there's nothing that could stand in my way that didn't stand in yours more. So it's the most important thing for me, having gone to college, and I feel like anything I do from here on out is okay because I've already achieved my dream. Everything else is icing on the cake.
That was really wonderful, Dave, and thank you so much for Historias and for StoryCorps. But I guess just finally, when you have a population like the Latino population that in reality right now, there's a huge explosion, wonderful things, but you also have a lot of fear, a lot of hate crimes, a lot of attacks against them. So where do you think that something like Historias kind of fits into this historical moment we're living in right now?
You know, we've collected stories from all over the country, all 50 states, big towns, small towns, every kind of person you can imagine. And when you hear one of these stories on Latino USA or on Morning Edition, you may be hearing from someone who's very different than you. But just for an instant, when you hear these stories, you're going to be walking in that person's footsteps, in Blanca and Connie's footsteps. And I think that act of walking in someone's footsteps helps us remember how much more we share in common than divides us, that we all are just people and how lucky we are to be alive. And if we spent less time screaming at each other and more time listening to each other, we'd be a better, more compassionate and thoughtful country.
Thanks for StoryCorps, for Historias, and we look forward to many, many more.
Thanks, Maria. Me too.
David Isay is the founder and president of StoryCorps. Go to our website at latinousa.org to find out how you can record your own StoryCorps Historia. And for this week, this has been Latino USA. Thanks for listening. Latino USA is produced by Walter Morgan, Mincho Jacob, Angela Maldonado, Alex Avila, and Katie Davis. Our executive producer is Sean Collins. Our listener comment line is 800-535-5533. Our email address is lusa@npr.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the University of Texas at Austin, the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio, and the Marguerite Casey Foundation. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR is provided by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. By Lumber Liquidators, hardwood flooring for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Catalogs at 1-800-HARDWOOD or lumberliquidators.com. And by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, informing health reform with policy research, data, and expert commentary. On the web at healthreform.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.